White Rocket Entertainment.
At the end of the day, it is always the same. At the end of the day, it is only a game. At the end of the day, at the end of the day, at the end of the day. At the end of the day, at the end of the day, at the end of the day. At the end of the day, it is always the same.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network, and by the book tour for Ken Ringer's Lorindo. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, we are here to talk about how the Brazilian Grand Prix came out on Sunday. Lewis Hamilton pulled out another win. And
in the rain.
In the pouring rain, and Rosberg has got one more race before he can seal up the championship. No, I'd rather talk about that, but we have to talk about a little team from a little town on the plains that went over to Athens and kept the streak alive, kept that streak of finding ways to make us all miserable alive when it comes to playing Georgia the last, like, 11 years. In fact, did you see that, I think it was it Jerry Hennin today that tweeted Auburn over the last 11 years, lose to Georgia, win the national championship and beat Georgia, lose to Georgia, almost win the national championship and beat Georgia, lose to Georgia. I'm getting kind of tired of those last three words there.
I am too. I said it before the game. I really wanted to beat Georgia, and I'm tired of losing to Georgia. And this year and even last year, we were the better team. Had no business losing to Georgia. None.
We were the better team quite a few of those years.
Sure, but I think, like, this year in particular...
Let me crack open the malt liquor here. All right, there we go. Go ahead.
This year in particular, we were the better team, and I think, yeah, we'll get into this game in particular and what happened, but I also think, like, it's not just, you know, who you play, it's when you play them.
Yeah.
And I think if Auburn had played Georgia in any other week of the season, we would have beaten them. By a considerable amount in some cases.
Oh, if we'd played them a month ago,
Lord,
it would have been 60-0.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the way it always seems to go. They get their players back about the time we lose ours. That's the way it always goes.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we know that Petway didn't play. We know that Sean White was having serious problems. The question in my mind, I might as well lead off with this. You tell me what you think. Was Rhett Lashley the only person either in the stadium or watching on television that didn't understand Sean White couldn't throw the ball?
I think, did you hear, you've been in the self-imposed hiatus, right? From the media news about this stuff?
Entirely from Facebook, not entirely from Twitter, but somewhat.
I mean, one of the things that came out Sunday night is, I mean, yes, it was obvious Sean White was hurt.
Right.
And they knew going into the game he wasn't 100%.
He didn't practice again.
But, I mean, so they knew he was hurt. But part of it was they looked at, you know, where the team was, and they looked at the Vanderbilt game, for example, and said, Sean White at 40% gives us a better chance to win than anybody else we have on the roster.
And that alone, and that's a whole other indictment, but okay.
Right. We're going to talk about that as a separate issue. The quarterback depth discussion, how we got here, is a separate issue. But that was where they were. But then I think during the game, Sean got hurt again, and it was even worse than that. And yeah. he admitted on Sunday night he was hurt worse and didn't tell the coaches.
Yeah.
That he didn't want to come out of the game. He was trying to, you know, be gritty and gutty and do it for the team, kind of. But there was a point where he was hurt so bad, maybe he was hurting the team by being out there.
He absolutely was. In the second half, for sure.
Well, you know what? There's plenty of blame to go around, and some of it was Saturday and some of it was hashed a long time ago. We're going to go through all of it, but we'll start with the Rhett Lashley piece. Yes, they should have seen that he was hurt and not effective. It was very obvious to Georgia that Sean White could not pass the ball further than 10 yards. Right. So they didn't feel any danger of us throwing the ball over their head. Mm-mm. And so that made playing defense much easier. I mean, Sean's not going to run when he's banged up, especially, and he's not going to throw the ball over their heads. Defense gets a lot easier in those cases. Yep. And so even this is the part that makes you want to bang your head against the desk. Mm-hmm. Even with that, and even with, you know, Truitt and Chandler Cox going out with injuries and Kerryon being at 80% still, if the receivers catch the freaking football, we win the game by one or two touchdowns, okay?
That hey, John, was the- John, even if Sean doesn't throw a pick six, we win the game with the points we had on the first drive.
Well, I know. I mean,
that's the mind-blowing thing about it.
We win the game 7-6 if he doesn't throw the pick six. But I'm talking about the receivers catch the ball when he throws it to them, and we're moving. We're not letting Georgia get the ball back and kick that second field goal even. And so to me, like we're going to give Sean White some blame. I mean, even though he was gritty and gutty and he was staying in there, you know, to try to win for the team and stuff. But it was also like he needed to say to the coaches, I want to stay in the game, but I can't throw the ball. So you need to use, you know, you need to just run it with me in there or whatever. And the coaches needed to do that. I mean, this is the part that makes me want to bang my – that made me during the game want to bang my head against the desk. Kentucky – had a series late in that game where they had to drive down the field and they put a freshman running back in the Wildcat and ran the same high school play 10 times in a row against Georgia and drove right down the field. Okay. Mm-hmm. We didn't have to play any quarterback. We could have stayed in the stupid Wildcat with mm-hmm. Kerryon the whole second half and we'd have won the game.
Yeah.
We didn't need to. And that's the part where I'm like, we're way overthinking it. And the passing the ball, the decisions to pass the ball on third and short in the second half were terrible.
Oh, absolutely. I by the time we did it like the third time, we had like three in a row where it was third and mm-hmm. two, and we passed every time just horribly. And by the time of like the second one, I was just like screaming at the TV, run the ball, okay? Run the blanking ball. Run the, you know, there was a lot of colorful language in my house on Saturday. The girls were running around. And when they didn't do it, I think I jumped up, ran in the kitchen, pulled off my shirt, threw it in the sink, and threw a pillow back across the room and knocked a lamp off.
And you know, if it was third and two and Petway was healthy, they wouldn't have thrown the ball. They wouldn't have. But, I mean, Kerryon runs on first down for 4 yards, a second down for 4 yards, it's third and two, and then we throw the ball.
Oh, my God.
And the receiver drops it. Okay?
Yep.
It was the 2015 Arkansas game level receiver screw up, as far as I'm concerned.
Yep.
And So you had a hurt quarterback, you had no depth at running back, yep. And although we had Cam Martin, And in addition to not subbing out Sean, and we'll get into the quarterback depth discussion in a minute, they didn't play Cam Martin their tailback, even though, you know, and not just that. It wasn't like Kerryon Johnson had 65 carries in this game either.
No, he had like seven in the second half.
Yes, he had a bunch of carries at the beginning, and they should have ridden him much harder in the second half. Because they could have not played him this week. We should have, and we knew Pettway wasn't playing. They should have given him the ball twice as many times in the second half. So
I think Lashley has said that now. I think Lashley said he wished he could do it over. I'm glad you now see what everybody else was seeing. I know it's tough, like on the sidelines and everything, but my gosh, I mean, it just seems so obvious.
I think I want to step back for a minute to the larger picture. Like going into the game, I think they knew that the Auburn defense could shut down Georgia and hold them to 10 points or so. I think they knew that.
Yeah.
And therefore, their offensive game plan was super conservative. It was basically like as soon as they got that first touchdown, it was like they went into Tuberville shutdown mode.
Yeah.
Okay.
Trying to win 7-0.
And at the end of the here's when you know you don't have a quarterback on the roster, when there's like 2 minutes left in the half and the other team's trying to punt the ball and you don't use any of your timeouts, you just eat them.
Yeah,
like that was the big. We're not even trying to score.
Right.
Okay. Because we know, like, we could have called the timeouts. We could have put JF3 in and had him run around. We could have put Jeremy Johnson in and had him throw one ball out of the end zone. Yeah. Like, if Sean can't throw it more than 10 yards, I mean, I wouldn't want Jeremy in there for series and series. But if you want to put him, stand him at the 50 to have him chuck the ball in the end zone, I'm fine with that while the clock expires. Yeah. But we didn't want – I mean, like, we literally didn't try to score. And it's like that kind of thing I always think backfires on you. Like, the team needs to know, like, we're trying to win the game. And we have confidence in you that you can go out there and drive down the field and win the game. You have to try. And this whole, like, we're up 7-0, we're going to, you know, wet 2 minutes, run off the clock and run in the end zone, run in the locker room thing was crazy. Like, Georgia's not going to adjust and stuff. So that was the first part. Like, Auburn's game plan was basically, you know, get to 10 points and shut it down. Like that, they were not attempting to score more. And then the injuries made that game plan much worse as the game went along, because Sean was hurt, you know, and Truitt got hurt. I think a lot of their plan was to give Truitt more carries in this game, especially as the game went along, and they couldn't do that or get him the ball more. You know, they brought in that little West Virginia play where they flip it to the guy in motion, the little sweep forward pitch thing. Yeah. And I think they were going to do that some more to him and to Stove. And then Chandler Cox got hurt. And I think this was one of the big turning points in the game when Cox went out, because he is one of the pieces on offense that, you know, we have to admit he's been playing much, much better as the team's played better, but he's also kind of irreplaceable now because I think college teams aren't like pro teams where they can meet all the time and practice all the time and have plan A through plan triple Z. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Like, a college team only has a couple of plans, and I think a lot of the stuff they wanted to do, even in the running game, required Chandler Cox to be on the field. And I think the Wildcat formation stuff they wanted to do required him to be on the field. And they hadn't practiced it with somebody else out there. And so they didn't trust anybody else to go out there and fill in that game situation. So then they just basically tore all those pages out that required Chandler Cox to be on the field and threw him away. So when you have a quarterback that can't throw and a bunch of that stuff, it's not going to work. And the defense is, you know, at that point, the momentum had all turned towards Georgia and they were feeling it. And then the receivers were dropping the passes when Sean White did throw it. That combined to make the second half disaster. But I want to go back to the thing you brought up a minute ago, which is – How did we end up in the situation where we didn't have another quarterback to put in the game? Okay. And you and I talked about this about 6 weeks ago when we made the decision to play Sean and make JF3 the backup. And what we talked about was, when you said this, is he really the backup?
Yeah.
Is he really the number two guy? And if he is really the number two guy, then they should have played him on Saturday. Like, they should have brought him into the game at some point, not because, he's taking over and that kind of silliness. We're way past that now. But because Sean was hurt and the offense needed a spark, there's a chance Sean could have gotten hurt worse in that game and missed the rest of the season.
Well, I think he may. They say the rumor now is he's having surgery this weekend.
Yeah, so I mean that
puts him out for the season, isn't it? Who's going to be the quarterback if that happens?
It's going to be JF3, and it's going to be bad. That's my thing is like you. At the time we made that decision, my thing was, again, Jeremy Johnson is out of the question. Like, you can't play him in a game. So it really was, and Tyler Queen is hurt. Yeah. I mean, that's the other quarterback that's on the roster that should be, in terms of the recruiting classes and stuff, he should be the backup.
All right, let's pause for just a second. Now, look, if there's been two little rumors come out in the last couple of days we got to look at. One is Sean is having surgery, I guess would put him out for the rest of the season. The other rumor, which was before that, which was totally separate, was that Woody Barrett tweeted and then deleted the tweet that said his time had come, meaning they're going to burn his red shirt and he'll be the backup for the next two games and I guess the bowl game. So what do you make of those two little factoids together? And what does it say about Jeremy?
The situation with Jeremy is what I said it was 6 weeks ago. You can't play him in a game. It's football malpractice. Hmm. Like, he has no confidence and he is not an effective quarterback. And so you can't, and Alabama A&M, if we're killing them and he's a senior and they want to roll him out there in the second half and let him play, whatever. Fine. Do it. Put him out there with the walk-ons or whoever else. We have to worry about risk getting hurt and let him throw the ball to Will Hastings and stuff and tear him up. Super. But you cannot play Jeremy Johnson against Alabama, and you can't play him in a bowl game. I mean, I'm sure they'll run him out there in the bowl game.
So do you play JF3 or do you put Woody out there?
I mean, if we were in the Ole Miss situation, Ole Miss burned their red shirt on their freshman and played him Saturday. I go back. I mean, this is where I was going with this is I said 6 weeks ago I'd have taken off Barrett's red shirt then and made him the backup quarterback. Mm-hmm. And JF3 was just like a gimmick, every once in a while a trick play kind of thing, because I didn't trust Jeremy, and I don't think John Franklin III can be an every down quarterback for this team. I think his passing is not effective enough, and they haven't let him do it, which also tells me they don't let you do things in the game they don't trust you to do. I think we kind of saw in the Vanderbilt game what JF3 could do against a decent defense. I would have had Barrett practicing as the backup 6 weeks ago. But it's too late now. I mean, if he hasn't been getting a bunch of snaps and playing, like the idea of burning his red shirt for what do? You let him play the entire Alabama A&M? So let's say I don't know anything about the Sean White surgery rumor. Okay. I have zero knowledge of and it wouldn't shock me a bit if Sean needed surgery after the season. Maybe you should give him surgery after the Alabama game, and he's got 6 weeks to recover before the bowl game, maybe. depending on what it is. If you're in a situation where, say that's really true, say Sean White is really hurt and can't play against Alabama, you get to run JF3 out there with Jeremy Johnson as his backup. Let's say on the first series, JF3 gets sandwiched between two defensive tackles and he's out.
Right. And against Alabama, that's not entirely unlikely.
No, the guy weighs like 100 pounds.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not – like, this is the other part. Like, the John Franklin III is – you know, he's really fast. He's really elusive. But he's not breaking any arm tackles against Alabama. Any of those guys get a finger on him and he's going down.
Yeah.
So, you know, the idea that he's going to be real effective against them, I think is a little silly. So, you're in a situation where what are you going to do then? I guess you just play Jeremy and everybody else on the team. This is the part where like everybody else on the team loses because you weren't going to play Woody Barrett. But I don't know how effective he, I mean, again, unless you had decided a long time ago that he had to play and you had him prepared, it's too late now. He can't pick up the whole thing in a week or whatever, and you're going to burn an entire season of his eligibility for two games.
Let me ask you this.
That didn't seem fair to him.
How many teams in the SEC alone, just in the SEC alone, how many teams have had their starting quarterbacks get hurt and go out?
Well, this is a lot. And this is the big issue with quarterback recruiting, which is I don't want to look at the quarterback depth chart anymore as we got a guy and he's good and we got a guy and he's the future. We have to look at the quarterback depth chart like the running back depth chart. Like I want three or four guys who can all play right now, who are talented, experienced, and healthy and could play.
Yeah.
And so there is no such thing as too many quarterbacks anymore for me.
But here's the thing I'm thinking of is I'm not loving the sport when it takes these young guys, some of whom actually have futures making money in the NFL, and puts them in surgery. I mean, I'm starting to wonder if college football is turning into the way the NFL was back in the 80s when, you know, they had to start doing something to protect the quarterbacks, because you got these quarterbacks and you got these 350-pound dudes landing on them, often landing on their shoulders, you know, driving their shoulders down into the ground with all that weight on the other side. I mean, my gosh, how's the human body supposed to take that?
And my answer to that would be you designed an offense where the quarterback runs the ball like that 300-pound guy. If you didn't want him to do that, then don't run the ball with the quarterback.
Well, it's not just running quarterbacks that are getting hurt, though.
No, I know, but I'm saying, like, that's part of it. I think that's part of it, the wear and tear with Sean and with Chad Kelly and with the A&M guy. If you run the ball against, you know, SEC defenses, you're going to take a pounding. So that's why, like, my thing is I want three or four guys – and this is the other part about this season. Like, I love Sean White, and I think when he's fully healthy, he is a really, really effective quarterback, and he's very good for this team, and I think he doesn't have to be any more of a runner than he is for this team to be very effective. But there is a 0% chance that he's going to stay effective for an entire season. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, so you definitely learned that by now.
I mean, you have. Like, you saw it. You can look at his body and see it. Like, he's not gonna grow like a foot and 60 pounds. So you have to have multiple guys ready to play who can be effective in the offense and who can also take the pounding too.
Let me read you a few statistics here while I've got this open. All right, just to put it all in perspective. Sean White's passing in this game, he attempted 20 passes. He completed 6. His total passing yards were 27 yards passing in the entire game. His average pass was 1.4 yards with one interception for a pick 6. His quarterback rating was a 1.0.
His quarterback rating was worse than the quarterback that played for Auburn in the 2012 Alabama game, the little guy. What was his name?
Jonathan Wallace?
Jonathan Wallace. It's worse than the Jonathan Wallace against 2012 Alabama quarterback rating. Man. And he threw three picks in that game.
Oof. Here's the, let's see, where did it go? There was another statistic I thought was interesting. Our entire receiving yardage was 37 yards. That counts the 20 that Kerryon Johnson got for a couple of shovel passes, basically shovel passes, minus some sack yardage. So our total receiving was 37 yards, and one play was 14, so the rest was all the other plays. I mean, and time of possession. This is in total yards. Auburn's total yards, 164. Georgia's, 343. Time of possession, Auburn just over 20 minutes. Georgia just under 40 minutes. First downs, Auburn 10, Georgia 21. Well, that's because Georgia and Auburn were on about the same pace in the first half, and on the second half, we didn't make any first downs.
I got another one for you. Ready?
Yeah.
There were seven plays where we lined up in the Wildcat, and those plays we averaged 6.5 yards, regardless of who was non-Sean White person at quarterback, okay?
Yeah.
On the other 37 plays, we averaged 2.5 yards. The plays where Sean was in at quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, anyhow, I mean, we're pretty much beating this horse at this point, but the defense played, it needs beating. The defense played great. You know, we were in the situation where we had done a bad job with quarterback recruiting. We were thin on running back recruiting. I'm still upset we didn't give the ball to Cam Martin in this game. Like, if we either Cam Martin or Kerryon, we needed to hand him the ball in the second half.
We talked about that last week's show. We said, how much will they use him? Will they use him at all, right? Remember, we were saying that they sounded more interested in using Cox at running back than they did in using Cam Martin. I don't know why.
And they ran Cox. Cam Martin's averaging 6.5 yards a carry. But they threw him the ball once late in the game on a key play. He ran a wheel route on one of those third down plays, and he dropped it. Like, it went right through his hands.
Yep.
So, and maybe there's a reason. The other thing I want to say about the receivers is this coaching staff does this thing every year. We all see it where they love the seniors, and they want to, you know, promote and push the seniors to the front and reward them and stuff.
Yeah.
But Marcus Davis is not that guy that was there 4 years ago making those big clutch catches.
No.
He is not that person. And I'm sure he's a good guy and I like him and all that, but you know, that's not the guy I want like the whole season resting on where we're trying to get him open and throw him the ball.
You know what I want to say? You know, against Alabama, you know what we ought to do? We won't. But against Alabama, especially as Petway came back, what I like to see against Alabama is put Woody Barrett out there at quarterback and put Stove and McLean, I believe, is the new one. And
he's redshirting, isn't he?
Yeah, and Myers and
Kyle Davis.
Put the four of them out there. And let's just have a youth movement. Let's have all freshmen just chuck it around and go. I mean, it couldn't be any worse than 2014 when we threw 44 points up on Alabama in Tuscaloosa.
I mean, this is the part. This is the reason this is so frustrating. Is because even with all this, you know, stuff that the coaching staff did wrong on the recruiting front during the game and stuff the players did wrong. And I want to say this again, like everyone's the coaches. There was a lot of poor execution by the players in this game too.
Yeah.
Okay. Receivers dropping the ball, offensive linemen and other guys in the backfield missing blocks. How many times did we have three offensive linemen blocking somebody while the blitzer ran free and Deck Shaw?
right up the middle, nobody even looking at him.
Multiple times.
And you know, I kept thinking, if they could just get the ball in the second half, I kept thinking, if they could just get the ball from the 25 to the 50, Carlson could come out and kick three or four 67-yard field goals, and we're good. I mean, we've become Gus, not Gus Malzahn, but Gus the Mule from the Disney movie, where they would just bring him out to kick an 80-yard field goal on the first down, you know. But that's okay.
I would have tried it.
If I was walking through the Auburn campus and I saw Daniel Carlson, I would say, Oyich, Daniel! Because that's what they used to tell Gus to kick the ball.
Yeah, I mean, that reminds me of something else, which is Georgia beat us on special teams. They were one of the worst special teams units in the country, and they got that big punt return in the second half, and they pinned us deep on punts a couple times where we were starting inside our own 10 in the second half, and that contributed to the lack of production because we were being conservative. We were down in our own end of the field, and they weren't going to do anything risky down there. So the field position stuff that Georgia did really, really made a huge difference in that part of the game. But beyond like the injuries before the game, during the game, the coaching decisions, the depth chart issues caused by recruiting practices and all that, we still should have won the football game. That's the thing that drives me bananas.
Because you heard that the Georgia offensive, did you hear the, I guess it was either Gary Danielson or Vern that was saying that during the week they were supposed to meet with the Georgia offensive coordinator, I guess, and said he walked in and said, if we can run the ball, we'll win. If we can't, we lose. And he walked back out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they didn't really run the ball that well. They shouldn't have won. I mean, they ran it mediocre, I guess, but we stopped them when it counted.
That's right.
But who could have, you know, he wouldn't have predicted that they'd hold us to one drive in the entire game. I mean, did we cross the 50-yard line more than that one time? I don't think so. See, the second quarter to me is a blur. I know in the first quarter, I know in the first quarter we came out and we had a bad first drive, and then I believe the second drive was the one that went for a touchdown.
That's right.
And then I don't remember much the rest of the first half, and then I just know that in the third and fourth quarter we threw the pick six, and then we didn't do squat the whole rest of the game. Including, now you mentioned the end of the first half. Let me mention the end of the second half, because I thought this was very interesting. There was a second left on the clock when the Georgia quarterback took a knee. Did you see that?
No.
You missed that.
I heard people fussing about it, but I didn't. I was so mad at that point.
I'm thinking, you know what it is there's no way Georgia's going to let us have even a chance at another miracle in Jordan-Hare in Sanford Stadium, right? They've seen that movie before. They were not going to give the ball back to us with 1 second left because they didn't want us to bring out Jeremy or some other passer that could actually throw a Hail Mary and just run the risk. And you may say, well, it wasn't going to happen. Well, it wasn't going to happen in 2013, except it did, you know? So that was exactly what went through my mind at the end of the game. Was they ran that clock out on purpose, even though the ball carrier was down and it was our ball, because they did not want to take any chance of us coming out and throwing a Hail Mary and winning that game 14-13.
Sure. The farthest we got was on the third drive. With the one after the touchdown, we got to the 49.
Of our side or their That's side?
Our side, the 49.
So we did
That's
not
the furthest
cross,
we got.
So
we did not
cross
midfield.
Once.
Yeah, that's right.
We crossed midfield one time.
That's pathetic.
That's unbelievable, and yet I totally knew it because I witnessed it.
Yeah. Wow. So I do want to say that the defense was great. The defensive line was in the backfield all day. The linebackers played maybe their best game of the year. They were very active. They were making a lot of plays. They were tackling well. I mean, they threw a couple long passes, but again, it didn't lead to anything. And I think as the game went along, like our defensive line was kind of taking over, and then they kind of stopped doing that. The defense played one of the better games that they played in a long time, holding Georgia to 6 points. So, I have to give them credit.
Absolutely. Great defensive effort, and I just hate that it's wasted. I have absolutely nothing to say about Alabama A&M. I appreciate them coming to...
I still got more things to say about Georgia.
Well, I've got more things to say, too. I got a couple of big things I wanted to say. Okay. But I'll let you go ahead and finish breaking down the Georgia game first.
No, I want to talk about the Georgia rivalry and the importance that we put on it.
Okay.
Because I know that Auburn's coaches spend extra time year-round preparing for Alabama. I know it, okay? Mm-hmm. That they do extra planning and extra film work and extra scouting, and they put some good stuff away to be able to use against Alabama every year. I know this, okay?
I would hope so.
And I want them to do the same thing against Georgia. It's a rivalry game, and I'm tired of this. And two of the worst Gus Malzahn offensive performances ever have been in the last two trips to Athens.
Yep.
It's terrible. So I want them to spend a little more time and a little more attention on this game. That's what I want to say about it. So.
No, I agree. They got to do something because our record against Georgia under our last three coaches has been terrible. I mean, they all – the Tuberville and Chizik and Gus all wish they had a kind of record against Georgia that Terry freaking Bowden had, if you can believe that. If you can believe that. So – yeah, we got to do something. This just can't stand anymore. It's too important of a series. We were gonna pull even with them if we won. Now we're down two.
Yep, that's right.
Yep. The misery, the horror. Well, I had two things I want to point out. One is, after this past week, I am now done with politics and done with football. That doesn't leave a lot in my life because those are two of the biggest things in my life. So as you well know, I've been reading a lot of Michael Connelly books. And so we're looking forward to doing a White Rocket show in the next few weeks coming up on you got to blow through the Bosch TV show and then you'll be all set, right? So we're going to do
this.
So I'm retreating into the world of crime fiction and fantasy. The only sports I have right now are racing and soccer. And because the IndyCar series is done until next spring.
Well, so and Auburn basketball.
Oh, Auburn basketball. I'll jump back in for Auburn basketball for sure whenever they really get going. I think they got a game coming up later this week, don't they?
Right now.
Oh, I guess my DVR is probably grabbing it then. Now that we've switched to, I don't want to make this like a plug or anything, but we had UVerse and they finally convinced us to go with DirecTV. It's all by the same company. And the reason why is they're not going to ever update UVerse anymore, so they're kind of stuck in 2009 technology. So we went back to DirecTV we used to have, and it actually like goes and finds stuff you like and pulls it in for you. So like it goes and gets Auburn basketball. I don't even set it. It go in the menu and it lets me pick that out. So that's pretty cool. So it's probably grabbing that for me right now. There's only one more Formula One race, and that's coming up in 2 weeks. And I'm going to have to just start watching Chelsea soccer again. I kind of lost track of Chelsea. They weren't doing too good the last year or so. But they're doing really well this year, so I'm going to be back in the soccer world. Now, here's the other thing I wanted to say before we get into our regular little features at the end here. The other thing is this, and this is about as profound of a thing as I've ever said on this show, but I'm not going to belabor it and go on and on about it. I'm just going to say it very succinctly and clearly, and I'm done. And that is, both on this show and on Twitter, okay, and in the whatever media you want to find me on, not on Facebook anymore. I quit that this week. But wherever you find me, whether this show, Twitter, whatever, I am done defending our coaching staff. I'm done. Now, that does not mean I agree with the critics. It does not mean I'm against the coaches. I'm just done defending them. I'm tired of going around and around and around. See, I enjoyed the last 2 months when people were just saying mostly good things about them, and I didn't have to defend them, right? But Lord knows, as soon as the Georgia game was over, really not even before it was over, here come all the people out of the woodwork that I've argued with for months and months and months, as you well know. The same people again, the ones I haven't blocked, back out of the woodwork again, wanting to start the same old, tired arguments with me. And I'm done with it. I'm not agreeing with you. You don't win, people. I'm just not going to waste my time debating it with you anymore. I've made my position on it infinitely clear. I don't want Bobby Petrino. I don't want Baylor dude. There's nobody else out there. Name me one other coach you'd rather have in the SEC than who we have. There's nobody. You want Spanky down at Florida? No. Do you want Georgia's coach just because they have a hex on us? I don't want that moron. That whining moron. Who do you want? Do you want Dan Mullen? I can't believe we'd rather have Dan Mullen at Auburn. I mean, Hugh Freeze, the guy that's had a worse season than we have. We've been out there kicking butt, rolling over teams 55-3, and Ole Miss is the best 9-loss team in America or whatever they are this week. Who do you rather have? Saban? You're not getting Nick Saban, okay? You're not. Nobody is. So who do you want? You want Muschamp? You're not getting Urban Meyer. I'm sorry. Who do you want? There is no coach out there that is going to come to Auburn that is any better than the staff we have now and probably can't recruit as well. I love the guy on Twitter that said, oh, we got to fire Malzahn because all these top 10 recruiting classes just haven't panned out. And I'm like, think about what you just said. All these top 10 recruiting classes. When in Auburn history have we ever been able to talk about top 10 recruiting classes back to back to back to back to back? Never. Pat Dye didn't pull in top 10 recruiting classes every year. Terry Bowden sure as crap didn't. Tuberville didn't pull in. Tuberville was known for getting the 3 stars and trying to make something out of them. Okay? Wasn't Gene Chizik. We're pulling in top 10 classes. If we can get a few things here and there squared away, get the quarterback situation mainly squared away, stop having our entire backfield hurt, that'd be nice. We're like a couple of things getting fixed from being great. Okay? I'm done with it, John. I am done with it. You are my witness. I am done with it. I'm done with you people. Go away. Go argue with somebody else. I'm done. Amen. The end. Finished. Boom. Mic drop.
Tell me how you really feel about it, man. I hear you. Okay, and I think the whole thing is kind of moot because they're not getting rid of Gus now, and it's kind of what it is. So, I mean, it's like a theoretical argument. So, all right. One of the other things this relates to, though, what I did want to talk about is we have had this cycle of Auburn being either great and like national championship caliber or terrible. And right. So I think when Auburn started to play well, a lot of Auburn fans went, oh, it must be national championship caliber.
Yep.
But I think you and I both kind of sensed in our gut we really weren't.
No.
And so this team is a real change of pace based on the last 5 or 6 years. They're just good. They're very good, but they're not great. They're not going to win the national championship or anything. They're good. They're going to go to a solid New Year's Day bowl. And, you know, and when they're complete, as somebody pointed out today, you know, a month from now, we go to the bowl game, assuming, you know, that Sean has healthy and plays. A pet way will be healthy. Everybody be healthy. We're going to absolutely annihilate some team in a bowl game.
That's it. When this team is completely healthy, it's very, very good. But the problem is there's barely anybody left on the team right now that's completely healthy. Here's some irony for you. You know one of the few people on the team that's healthy right now? Carl Lawson. How's that for ironic?
It is ironic, but part of the reason I think he's healthy is because we have such great depth that we're playing a 15 guys a defensive line during the course of the game. Mm-hmm. So that is ironic. All right, you ready to go to some listener questions?
Sure.
The enthusiasm is spectacular.
This should be a real treat. Bring it on. I can't wait. Favor me with the questions from the listener. I'm sure the first question is WTF.
Wait, I thought you were going to play the music.
No, we don't have any music tonight, John.
Okay, zero music. All right. Are you ready?
This is a music-free episode.
I was going to say there's no sound effects.
No, this is a sound effect-free episode, John.
All right. The first question comes from somebody who gets to go to the front of the line.
Okay.
And that is my mother, Joyce Ringer.
Oh, absolutely. She gets the she gets the red carpet to the front of the line.
And she says, were we that bad or was Georgia that good?
Georgia was not good.
No,
Georgia was not good. Georgia's offense scored 6 points.
It was us.
Georgia at home scored 6 points. Yeah, it was just that our offense is so fragile that when it starts losing pieces, it all comes apart. Our offense is like an SR-71 Blackbird streaking along at like Mach 3, and then all of a sudden pieces start flying off it. That's just not a good sign for how that flight's going to end up. Just not.
All right. Our next question comes from Stephen Thompson, who says, hi, Vantage on. It's Stephen Thompson here again, the AU fan from Northern Ireland.
Okay. Cool.
And he has a very long question. I'm going to cut to the key part of it, which is basically he was talking about the quarterback depth and, should we have put in JF3, which you kind of already talked about. And it said Van quite correctly said in an earlier episode that if JF3 is the backup, when the number one is injured, you have to put in the backup. He said, I got the uneasy feeling that Gus wanted to put Jeremy in the game at one point but resisted because of how this would reflect on JF3 as his number two. The result, a clearly injured and ineffective White staying on the field 2 quarters longer than he should have. And he says, and who was calling the plays? Some of that play calling is reminiscent of last year's Georgia game, which Gus called the plays.
No, I think the plays were being called in the second half by a combination of a small gopher and a twister spinny wheel.
Okay. Our next question comes from Michael Phillips, who says, a great podcast. It's nice for folks like us who live far away from most Auburn fans. He lives in Austin, Texas. And he says, my question is, when has Auburn ever had a backup quarterback that came in to relieve an injured or struggling starter who then did a great job, became a successful starter in a later season? It seems like we've never been too deep at quarterback despite being sometimes 5 deep at running back.
Patrick Nix is the only one that comes to mind immediately.
And tell the Patrick Nix story.
Yeah, Stan White's senior year, 1993, we're 10-0, we're playing Alabama at home in Auburn, and we're down several points, like 17-5 or something. We had a safety and a field goal. And it's fourth and like 30 at Alabama's 30, something like that. It's only been, a few years. And
22?
And Stan White gets hurt on third down, and he limps off the field, can't go back in, and so Patrick Nix goes in. He's been the backup that whole year. And instead of punting or trying a really long field goal, they let Nix just chuck it to the corner down there, and We were very fortunate that I believe it was Antonio Langham switched over and covered a different receiver from Frank Sanders, which was stupid. And so Frank went up and caught it and dove in and scored the touchdown that really kind of rallied the team to go on and win that Iron Bowl and make us go 11-0. And then, of course, Nix was the starter in 94 and 95. He was a sophomore in that 93 game, but he went on to play 94 and 95 as the unquestioned starter ahead of backup Damian Craig. And, of course, Damian Craig went on to be very successful in 96 and 97. So, if nothing else, under Terry Bowden, we did have a very nice run of quarterbacks. Stan White, senior year, Patrick Nix's junior and senior year, and Damian Craig's junior and senior years all went, I think, pretty darn good for quarterbacks, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
And then it all ran out in 98 with a very young Ben Leard who was good as a senior, but or a junior, senior, somewhere. He was good as a senior in 2000, but in 98 as a sophomore, he just wasn't ready to take over. And he really struggled pretty bad in 98. 99, 2000, both were very good for Ben Leard. I think Ben ended up being the SEC quarterback of the year in 2000, believe it or not.
I think you're correct.
But in 98, he threw a bunch of pick sixes.
Our next question comes from Reynolds Wolf.
Oh, if only I had my sound effect. Reynolds, you waited until this week when I didn't even hook up the soundboard. Hold on. Like an unwanted neighbor that comes over to visit from the Weather Channel, Reynolds Wolf, Thundersnow. Okay, there you go.
That was beautiful.
Thank you.
He says it
was meaningful for me, too.
He asked a long question, but some of this is really good, so I'm going to read it.
Okay. He always had good stuff. Go ahead.
He says, first, a preface. I'm not on the Fire Gus bandwagon and never was, but that doesn't temper the level of frustration I felt with 10 minutes left to go in the fourth quarter. Yeah. The players were listless, the play calling abysmal, except for the defense, God love them. I was perplexed by the apparent lack of focus and passion shown by our Tigers. I expected a bit of sleepwalking with Vandy. It was a total trap game, and I'm so thankful for that win. But this was Georgia. Freaking Georgia, yep. A team we should have beaten last year, an enemy worthy of making the game day on the calendar with a circle and a skull and crossbone over the numbers. Plus, it was one of the worst Bulldog squads they've had in years. Payback alone should have been a big enough motivator for Auburn. Our second biggest rival, what a missed opportunity. But there's more. Going into the game, there was so much on the line. Mm-hmm. Winner-take-all game against the Tide, and maybe with just enough moonlight, magic, pixie dust, and a fifth of Jack Daniels, we stumble into the SEC championship and we see a glimpse of the playoffs.
Preaches.
But yeah, back to that 10 minutes ago in the fourth, I knew it would never happen. Yeah. He says, number one, if Spicy Sean's throwing arm is now held together with duct tape, dental floss, and chicken wire, how terrible must John Franklin III be if they won't let him make a single attempt at passing?
Oh, my gosh. That's fair.
Number two, why don't you think they even made the attempt to send the ball deep? We were adrift in a sea of three and outs in the second half. Yeah. Who cares if they intercept it? It's as good as a punt. And heaven forbid, it might actually keep the Bulldogs from sacking the line, thus giving our running game a better opportunity for success. If the answer is they don't have him throw deep since Sean was hurt, that means the coaches knew Spicy Sean's limitations. It's on them.
Yeah.
And number three is, who do you blame for the lack of quarterback development? Sorry, I'm angry. You guys are awesome. Reynolds.
I think that I want the next Auburn coach to be Reynolds Wolf. I think he could get him going, man. He sees the problems very clearly. I think he's absolutely right. Yeah, Reynolds was texting me a couple of things during the game that showed he was not any happier than the rest of us. I always try to console him and try to find the bright spot. There wasn't a lot of bright spots to find. Mm-hmm. There just weren't a lot of bright spots to find this week. I don't know what to say.
Man, it could be worse. Pat Ringer went to the game.
Oh, Pat. Oh, yep. Sorry, Pat.
All right. Auburn Elvis.
What wasn't as bad at halftime, though? At least we were winning.
Yeah.
2003 Georgia game in Athens is the only Auburn game I've ever left at halftime.
Mm-hmm.
I knew nothing in the second half was going to be any better than what I was seeing in the first half. I knew 2003. I'm like, yeah, this is it. This is what we get. It's done.
All right, next question from Auburn Elvis. He says, in the Moss on offense, how few of times can you run the ball in a half and win? Hint, it's more than seven.
Yeah.
John B. Roberts, in a similar vein, says, can a team take a knee on offense the entire game and still win?
Well, or you just bring out Carlson to try 80-yard field goals, man. That's what I'm up for.
I'm there.
I'm totally up for the again, not Gus Malzahn, Gus the Mule. If you don't know what I mean, Google Gus the Mule, Disney. Boy, it's Gus. Boop. 90-yard field goal.
So the other rumor today is that either Malik Miller is coming back and may play at running back in the last couple of games, or they may move Rudy Ford back to offense to play running back in the last couple of games.
I did hear something about that. I feel bad for him. He's trying to get in the NFL as a safety. The last thing he wants to do is try to relearn a different position right before he goes in the draft.
Carl Von Drunker says, so our second leading tackler is about to become a running back again? What the actual F is happening?
Well, it's just injuries are happening. It's not, you know, what can you do? What can you do? I think they think that Martin is just too little. He's the lizard, you know?
But my thing is, like, you signed him.
As a complimentary piece, once he's not a true freshman.
But this goes back to something I was saying a minute ago. This coaching staff, like, they don't trust any of the freshmen. Look around the SEC at the other freshmen who are playing big roles on a lot of teams.
Yeah.
Like, we have these great freshman receivers. We've phased them out since the Arkansas game.
Yep.
Okay. I know that Kyle Davis screwed up a couple plays in the Ole Miss game. There was one where he was like, Sean White did a rollout bootleg kind of thing, and the only receiver on that side of the field was supposed to be Kyle Davis. It was a one guy pattern, but he screwed up and stayed in and blocked his guy. And he said nobody was in the pass pattern for Sean to throw the ball to. And they chewed his ass out when he came to the sideline. So there was a couple things like that. And so I know they've kind of, you know, scaled back his role since that. But we have these guys to me that have more ability than the older experienced guys, but we're not going to play them because they make us scared that something bad's going to happen.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think any of that is that Gus's offense in particular relies in large degree on players going certain places at certain times in almost a ballet-like movement, and he needs the players to know how to do each of their little parts to make the whole thing go? And if you put a player like a freshman out there that doesn't exactly know where to go or what to do, he might feel like it messes everything up.
I get a little bit of that, but it's not that complicated in offense. And I think particularly at running back, you could hand him the ball. You could play him every down. And again, this guy, like, it goes back to more the other part you said. They think he's too small. I think what you said months ago, the Malik Miller injury was huge. If Malik Miller had been healthy, this was his game.
Yeah.
And they'd get him the ball 20 times in this game if he was healthy.
Oh, man.
Think
of how many running backs we have hurt now.
Yeah. All right. Andy Frame says, has the Georgia game affected, number one, how confident you are about this team in next season, or number two, how confident you are in Gus's coaching abilities? I would say no and no.
I really struggled with the play calling in the second half. That's the only thing I have to say, really.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. Like, did they screw up the second half? Yes, they did. 100%. They'd have been go back to what I said. They'd have been better off going Wildcat the whole time. Don't even bother throwing the ball.
But if Petway had been healthy, or if Sean had been healthy, we wouldn't even be having this conversation.
That's right. If either one of those guys,
we'd be talking about that 35-3 win over Georgia.
Well, I was saying, or else if Petway had been healthy, we win. If Sean is all the way healthy, we win. If Kerryon Johnson is 100% healthy, we win that game.
Yeah.
I mean, if that yeah. remember Carry On, the guy in Arkansas State who reversed field, and the guy against LSU who is running over their defenders, that guy hasn't come back. Right. Like he's you know, not that person still. Not if right that now. Guy was on that field, we win the game.
Yep.
So
what we're really critiquing is how our offensive coordinator called plays when his toolbox was down to a very short, stubby Phillips screwdriver and a giant pipe wrench. All the other tools have been taken out of his box. And I mean, you can evaluate him based on how he did that, and you can say, well, you should have done a better job, but really, that's not what the position he's supposed to be in. Now, again, you can say, well, he has to be able to have, he knew going in that that could be a possibility, he had to be prepared for it. Well, sure, I agree. And like I said, I have a problem with it, yes.
Yes.
But that's not really the position, you know, it's just not. It shouldn't have ever been the situation to begin with. We just had incredibly bad luck. We've had worse luck with injuries since with any team I've seen since. Was it the 98? I think it was the 98 team that went.
Yes, we were in this like six-string center.
Six centers. We went through six centers. How do you go through six centers in half a season?
Mm-hmm.
But we did.
This doesn't lessen what I think is going to be of this team in the future. I mean, again, does Lashley deserve blame? Absolutely. Do the players on offense deserve blame for their lack of execution? Yes. The players who miss blocks, the players who drop the passes, Sean for misfiring the passes and not communicating about his injury? Yes. I mean, all of those things are equally as true as Lashley screwing up. So that they're all in the same boat. We are not going to be in this situation again. In my mind, like I was thinking about this today, we get Jared Stidham to commit. The depth chart for next year quarterback is like Sean White, Jared Stidham, Woody Barrett, Tyra Queen, and two freshmen redshirting. And we will not be in this position again where Sean White gets knocked out of a game and we're like, oh no, what do we do? Mm-hmm. We'll have two or three guys standing over there that we can go, you go in the game. And if one of them is terrible, we can send the other one in the game. So that's my vision about like the quarterback depth chart.
Sure. I just think we're not to come to that, but yeah,
I know. And we're not going to lose any running backs, and we're going to have Petway, Kerryon back, and Malik Miller, Chandler Cox, all those guys are going to be back on the running back side, so, all right.
Any other questions?
Yeah, we got a couple more. I'm sorry.
This one?
War Room Eagle says, are you looking forward to Auburn clobbering someone in a bowl game as much as I am? Oh, everyone Lord, should yes. be healthy by then.
Lord, yes.
Neil Page says, what words of encouragement can you offer to Auburn grads living in Atlanta? We are caged in Mordor, endless barking, no relief.
I was there, man. I was living and working in Lawrenceville, like 30 minutes from Athens from 95 to 06. I feel your pain. I absolutely feel your pain. It was horrible after 02 and after 03. Oh my gosh. It was absolute torture. The question before that though, talking about the bowl game, we're going to end up most likely 8-4?
Yes.
And so, unless there's a miracle.
Let's assume 8-4. Like, I'm Outback Bowl. That's the kind of the thing we're looking at.
I just can't. I, on the years we don't go to the big bowls, I just want us to end up in Nashville one time so I can go. I don't ask for much, man. Just a 4-hour drive to a bowl game would be so nice. Just 4 hours right down the highway.
I'm suspecting like Outback Bowl against Nebraska, Iowa.
Don't say Wisconsin, please.
No, we're not going to play Wisconsin. I don't want Wisconsin.
Too good.
Their defense is great. I don't want any part of that.
Yeah.
Let's put it this. Let's forget the bowl tie-ins. And forget, you know, what we think is going to happen. Who right now, today, who do you want to play in a bowl game?
Assuming we're healthy again, right?
Yeah. It's weeks away. Everybody in the team is healthy. Who do you want to play? Who do you like? I want a piece of that team.
Oklahoma.
Yeah, that'd be fun. See, if we'd have beaten Georgia, I really think the eventual, even if we lost Alabama, I think we would have gone to the Sugar Bowl and played Oklahoma. Hmm. And now I think it's going to end up being like LSU at Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And Oklahoma is all offense and no defense. We could have scored 60 on them.
Oh, God. Who will we end up playing, though, at the end, like in the outback? Like a 15 to 20 range team, maybe? Like
maybe a Big Ten team. Nebraska, Iowa. You know, I don't, again, like the scenario is Penn State wins that side. I think Penn State's going to end up winning that side of the Big Ten and playing Wisconsin in the title game. So
instead of Ohio State and Michigan?
Because Penn State beat Ohio State. If Ohio State beats Michigan, Penn State wins the tiebreaker and goes to the title game. And Ohio State and Michigan have to sit on the sideline, which is hilarious.
Oh, that would be so funny. And the Big Ten will be pulling their hair out. They'll be losing their minds.
Well, until one of them gets in the title game anyway. But they'll both have two losses if that happens.
That's like if the SEC championship game ended up being like Kentucky and Mississippi State.
Yeah. That's right.
The SEC would be going bananas. Bananas.
So, I mean, I haven't honestly. I'm trying not to look at the bowl projections. Right. So I don't want to think about it. But
well, I'm not even interested in it right now. So,
yeah.
I have important European sports cars to follow.
Okay. I'm sorry. One or two more questions, then we're out of here. Albeast says, if Truitt and Petway were out, do you let Rudy Ford take reps at running back with Kerryon?
I would ask him because, again, he's trying to get in the NFL as a safety, which is a better position lately to be anyway.
But you're saying, like, if he says, yeah, I want to run the ball 10 times in this, like, against Alabama, and I'm sure.
If we don't need him on defense, I guess, then yeah.
Josh Corbett says, is it time to start grooming Woody Barrett for the starter?
Yes. I said that months ago. I mean, I know he came in a little later than everybody thought. He didn't have a chance to learn the playbook and everything. And I know he's kind of raw. People have been pointing out to me that he's very raw. He didn't play quarterback as much. He's, you know, this, that, and the other, but you go watch his highlight video and you tell me he can't go out there and be a difference maker at quarterback in the SEC.
Well, and I think they targeted him specifically because they think he'd do well in this offense. So.
Right. Absolutely.
Tiger Beasley asked a really good question. He says, is it absurd to think the entire offensive collapse relates to injury? The Georgia defense knew White was off, so they stacked the box, forcing pass plays. Receivers dropped passes because the timing and her velocity was off because – you know, it was the same guy throwing the ball, but Sean wasn't throwing it the same way. You know what I'm saying? So, I think if in the big calculus, you know, injury was like 80% of the reason we lost that game.
Yeah.
The sum, you know, when you add in like Petway and White and everybody else. Oh, yeah. All right. Last question. John Will Rice says, where does 2016 rank up there in the what might have been category?
Well, I don't think we know yet, but I mean, if it goes the way we kind of expect, if we end the season 9-4, if everything goes about as well as it realistically can the rest of the way, and we beat A&M, lose to Alabama, and then beat, you know, whoever, Nebraska or somebody in the bowl, we end up 9-4. I mean, that's the same record we had in 1984. That's pretty much the same record we had in 2002. Those were not great seasons, but they were not bad seasons. And they certainly, I think it's an improvement over last year. And the middle of the season was great.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of young talent, especially on offense, that's going to get better. So.
And my gosh, but think about this. And, you know, this is something I should have said on Twitter, but I'm just not in the mood these days. But, you know, a season where Auburn is kicking butt, and then the great running back gets hurt, and then we go and we lose in an upset at Georgia. No, to Georgia. We actually have no running backs going up hardly at all to play against Alabama in Tuscaloosa, but we still beat them 17-7. And then we go and beat a Big Ten team in a bowl game, and we finish, guess what, 9-4, I believe.
The 2002?
2002.
Trey Smith.
I've been comparing this season to 2002 all along.
The other part is, like, in the what might have been thing, is I think people look back and go, man, the Clemson game was very winnable.
Yep.
You know, this game was very winnable. The A&M game, if we'd have played it, you know, the way right. If we'd have run Petway a lot more, I think that could have come out differently. So that's the frustrating part.
Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. That's it for listener questions.
All right. When I look at last week's games, the only thing that stands out to me is that there were upsets everywhere. Alabama is just not going to lose any football games this year, are they? I mean,
we'll talk about that next week.
Yeah, we say that, and then you never know. But I mean, my gosh, they look tough. They look like us at our best, except they have like five deep at every position, so they can lose, you know, a guy if they need to and still keep going. Other than that, I wasn't really excited about anything that happened. I mean, Arkansas continues to be schizophrenic as crap, and Ole Miss, poor Texas A&M feels as bad as we do.
Ole Miss brought out their freshman quarterback, and he's exciting.
Yeah, he did it. And then I wish I could have watched that game, but I just didn't care after our game was over. I turned the TV off. I put in a movie in or something. Just didn't care.
I kept watching. I watched USC beat Southern Cal, and I watched Iowa beat Michigan, and I watched the end of Clemson losing, and that was all great.
I did have the TV on the Washington USC game because I'm kind of cheering for Washington this year, and I was disappointed with that too. So I just couldn't quit tripping over myself there.
Well, to go back to what your point was a minute ago, I haven't watched those teams like Washington and Michigan. They want no part of Alabama. Okay,
no.
Washington is soft, and Michigan is a lot like that Michigan State team from last year. They wouldn't. Their defense is really good. They have a lot of good defensive players, but they wouldn't score 10 points in Alabama.
And reality finally caught up with Dabo.
Yeah. Clemson's been playing with fire.
Yep. Upcoming games, we finally get the makeup bowl, Florida LSU.
LSU's going to kill them.
You think? All right.
Yes.
Other than that, I'm just not seeing anything I'm excited about.
Arkansas at Mississippi State, Ole Miss, Vandy.
Oh, boy, that's not good. I guess I'll find something to watch. Yeah, our game will be like, is it the SEC alternate channel or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
The Feed and Seed channel? It'll be on Discovery Channel West or something like that, you know. All right. Well, that's all the football I feel like talking about this month, so... I'm done. I had to kind of force myself to get this far, but I managed to make it through. So,
Van, we appreciate you coming on the show and talking about this tonight. And I want to tell people I did go back and watch that game again. I watched it. I didn't let myself get upset. I watched it like a coroner watching an autopsy.
You're Quincy.
That's it.
You watched it analytically. You broke down some. You were breaking down film.
I just turned the emotional part off and said, "What happened here? What went wrong?"
You told the wife and kids to leave the house, go to the mall, go do some shopping. I got film to break down, and you broke down that film. I just broke down, was all. I just broke down in tears, and that was about it. I was not feeling so great good to begin with, and then that just kind of capped it off, and I'm like, yeah, I'm done with this. I'm gonna descend into fantasy and crime fiction entertainment for a while. All right, well, I didn't blurb the book, but do check out our two books where we actually had lots of fun stuff to talk about. The Decades of Dominance. Season of Our Dreams. Am I not doing a good job of selling the commercial here at the end?
It's a little bit like our 2012
promos. Another trip to the dentist, John. Yeah, we picked a heck of a year to start this show. It's a miracle we have any listeners now after the way we started out in that year.
The analogies that year were so bad.
If you listeners out there you've just started listening to the show in the last couple of years or during the magical 2013 run, and you think to yourself sometime, you know, I'm going to go back and listen to their earliest shows, kind of from the beginning. I just have one word for you. Don't. Don't listen to 2012. I mean, we did the best we could to make it entertaining, but we were hurting. We were miserable, much like me now. All right, well, in any case, I do have to recommend Lorindo to you. Gene Lorindo, great coach, assistant for Shug Jordan. You got not much time left if you want to get a signed copy. I think Auburn Elvis wanted to get a signed copy for one of his relatives.
We got it worked out.
You got that worked out? Excellent. Okay. There are other people that might be wanting to do that, so drop us a line, send us an email to auwishbone@gmail.com, and we will get you hooked up. Other than that, John, I'm going to go and stick my head under a tub full of boiling water while I smack myself in the face with a hammer about 100 times. So I just can't take it anymore. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man. Just don't come home too soon. Just don't come home too soon. I don't care what people say. Be shaken yet, but you might prove them wrong. Even long shots make it real. Just don't come home to sleep. Just don't come home to sleep.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
All right. I can't wait to decide what music and out stuff I'm going to use for this episode and what title I'm going to come up with. Right now, I'm looking at the title of this episode being Cracking Open the Malt Liquor, since I said that earlier.
I like it.
All right. All right. Take it easy.
All right. Basketball time.
Don't watch any more Auburn football. Don't rewind it. Don't watch it anymore. Just delete it, delete it, delete it. Do what I did. I deleted it.
All right.
Go to bed.
All right, man. At the end of the day, it is all.